across Europe. This is Previously in Europe, a podcast that was previously in Europe. I'm your co-host Hugh in London. I'm your lovely co-host Kieran in Berlin. Say hello, Kieran.
Oh my god, Dalmatia is a place where Dalmatians are from.
It's true, those dogs that look good from afar, but I think up close are kind of scary and angry all the time. They've got like red eyes. Anyway, I digress. This week, we are discussing the Croatian parliamentary election as part of our recurring segment, No Elections Left Behind. Keen listeners of the podcast will notice that we did leave an election behind, which was the Serbian election. Their parliamentary election was a couple of weeks ago. And was it longer? Anyway, that's not important. We are going to discuss it as part of a... Because there are... In a lot of ways, the Serbian election was a scam of sorts. And we would like to discuss it in the context of what is currently going on in Serbia in terms of the large, massive street protests. So we're going to do that as an episode itself, as opposed to discussing the election in isolation sometime soon.
Because the election was a sham!
So this week we are discussing the Croatian parliamentary election, which is more recent, and we would not like to leave it behind, because it is much less sexy than the Serbian situation. It is drier. It's drier.
Yeah. Some interesting stuff happened.
Yeah, some interesting stuff happened.
Would you like some facts, Hugh, about the election?
I'd love some facts.
Yeah. All right, let's go. The 2020 Croatian parliamentary election took place on the 5th of July, 2020. Election, I believe, was meant to happen this year. They had until the 17th of July of this year to announce when the election would be happening. But they had it early. More on that later. This is to elect all 151 seats of the Croatian parliament. 76 seats are needed for a majority. The turnout was 46.9%, down 5, almost 6% from last time. Oof. Currently, we are reporting on results that are 99.99% reporting. Chances are that extra 0.01% is not going to make a huge amount of difference. But who knows? The year is 2020. Predicting the future is a fool's errand. All right. So, the results that we have are, in first place in this election, is the HDZ, or the Croatian Democratic Party, or Democratic Union, I should say. Leader is Andrej Plenković, and they got 37.26% of the vote, resulting in 66 seats themselves, 10 short of a majority. This is 5 up from last time. Next is Restart, a coalition mostly made up of various like center-left parties, social democratic parties. The big one there being the STP, the Social Democratic Party of Croatia. They're the classic like majority, they're a classic like second or first party of Croatia. Croatia's political system is very much like your classic 2.5 party system in Europe. They got 24.87% of the vote, resulting in 41 seats, down 4 from last time. That's a lot of the seats already counted for. Next, we have a new party, DPMS, or Miroslav Škoro's Homeland Movement, which I love that that's what it's called. Homeland Movement got a 10.89%, almost 11% of the vote, resulting in 16 seats. They are new. Then we have MOST, which is the Bridge of Independence. It's just called MOST. They're a weird party. I think we've talked about them before in the past. 7.39%, 8 seats, down 5 from last time, because it turns out they're kind of useless. Next, we have the Green Left Coalition, which is a large coalition of fairly small parties. They got 7 seats. They're new this time around, and they're predominantly made up of 5 of those 7 seats went to the We Can Party, or Mojemo, very similar to Podemos. They're cool, and they're new. They got 6.99% of the vote, 7 seats. Then we have Pametno, which is a liberal kind of centrist political party. They got 3 seats. That's up from 3. I'm not sure how they're not new. I have to look into that a little bit. Then we have the Croatian People's Party. They're the classical liberal party. Not classical liberal, but like they're the they were like the formerly established liberal party of Croatia. They've had a fair falling out both last election and this election because they got one seat minus eight from their current place, which, you know, if they had nine seats in the current parliament, that would make them the fourth largest party. So that's not a great look. It's quite a precipitous fall. And then we have the People's Party Reformists, which again is another centrist party in Romania. Not Romania, Croatia. Although, yeah. They got 1% of the vote with one seat, which is about the same they had last time. The rest of the parties I'm not going to mention. Most of them make up the kind of ethnic minority parties. Croatia has a seats allocated to ethnic minorities system. This is pretty common of like... Eastern Europe, and particularly like the former Austro-Hungarian Empire, I believe it is, that have like these systems in place. So there's like, if I remember correctly, there's like three seats for Serbians, one for Italians, one for Hungarians. It's a total like eight seats go to specific minorities, and thus like there are specific minority parties, such as Union of Albanians got one seat this time around, and that is a Albanians in Croatia interest party.
Yeah. It makes a lot of sense in countries that were like overlapping heavily and there was a lot of migration between them, and then suddenly they're like, and now we're separate countries.
Yes,
fair enough.
Yeah, it's basically former Yugoslavia.
Yeah, the so the HNSLD, the kind of like liberal party, they were affected by the you know, common phenomenon of liberal party that goes into coalition with a conservative party and then gets immediately eaten in the next election.
Yes, a coalition sickness, junior coalition sickness. Yeah, that's pretty common, all right.
Yeah, so they've announced they haven't announced like the government itself, but they've announced they have enough seats to form a government. Which is going to be a coalition of the main conservative party, the HDZ, the liberals again with their one seat now instead of eight, nine seats, the other conservative party, the NSR, the People's Party and Reformists, and then they have support from all of the national minority parties. This is probably this seems to be like due to a kind of consensus that there is still a pandemic on broadly in Europe and there needs to be some sort of like definitive decisions being made, as opposed to, you know, any delays in forming a government would be probably quite dangerous right now. So I think that explains the speed, and also the fact that like everyone involved in these negotiations had 1 to 3 seats at most. So it's not requiring like anyone with a lot of negotiating power to get on board.
I remember reading some stuff about like government formation around this. It said that also like most Bridge of Independence is possibly likely to be like either formally a part of the coalition or some sort of support for it.
Yeah, right.
Which, yeah, so, like, anything, the main takeaway from these results, if you just, like, woke up on, you know, like, the 6th of July and looked at these results as, like, a concerned Croatian citizen, is very much that, like, HDZ won. The gap between them and the Restart coalition is, like, a sizable one for the size of these, like, for the size of this kind of politics, like, 66 versus 41. And Restart was already like this pre-made coalition. It didn't have a lot of people that it could work with. Even if like all the ethnic minority parties and the Green Left helped out, that wouldn't be anywhere close to a majority.
No.
And
I guess there was speculation kind of going into the election that Skoro's party, who are very conservative kind of right-wing anti-immigrant kind of policies, there was like a concern that neither HDZ or Restart would do as well as HDZ have done, and they would end up in a situation where it would be most advantageous for them to form a government quickly by giving Skoro whatever he wanted. allowing him into coalition. I think there may have been a very different conversation happening if HDZ hadn't done as well as they did. Not that I think it's necessarily a good thing. It's just they did a lot better than they were expected to in terms of seats. So I guess I want to talk briefly about the kind of peculiarness of when this election happened. So they had to call an election by, was it July 17th? Yes. So they had to call it by July 17th. They didn't have to have it by July 17th. They had to announce when they had
having elections.
And effectively, there was concern during the, like, earlier in the year, kind of like April, May, that while they expected the pandemic to have, like, eased a bit, there was concern there'd be a second wave and that they wouldn't be able to have an election for some time. So I think probably ill-advised from certainly from a like a political perspective, the Social Democratic Party were making calls kind of that they should be earlier than otherwise planned elections and they should dissolve parliament early, which the Conservatives were on board with. So everyone agreed that they dissolve parliament early and have early elections, and July seemed like a reasonably pandemic would be a lower state, and they would avoid any like resurgence come autumn. But effectively what they've ended up doing is there's a lot of like I think quite reasonable criticism that the HDZ have been in power for some time now, and the call has largely been that Croatia's economy is very dependent on tourism, and tourism is going to be very badly affected by this. Obviously, like a year ago, that wasn't a prediction, but it is still, you know, people would strongly argue for diversifying your economy, because tourism is always going to be something that will go in waves. Your country will be popular 1 year, and the next year it might not get the same kind of push it had the previous year. It's going to be something that comes and goes to a certain extent.
Game of Thrones isn't on the air anymore.
No, exactly. And I think the people of Dubrovnik can probably attest to there being obvious Game of Thrones effect, where there was a boom in the industry, which has kept up to some extent. Like Croatia's a lovely place, but it's not going to be like the height of tourism every year.
No,
and again, that's also seasonal. It's not like a good reliable income necessarily for your entire country's economy to be so heavily dependent on. And like, this is probably going to impact their economy long term much more than a lot of other economies. For instance, like Germany's economy or any other like more industrial country is going to come back in a different way.
I love Croatia, like a little bit of like Kieran putting on his own hat, kind of like being Kieran for a second. Croatia is like one of my favorite countries in the world, but it does have this like huge issue of like just being like way too reliant on tourism. Like if you visit Croatia in the summer, like Zagreb, the capital, is effectively dead. It's a huge student city. It's like a huge like educated population. It's like a great place to learn, blah blah blah. But like every student will just flee the capital during the summer to get a job like on the Adriatic coast.
Yeah,
doing something like tour guides, restaurant work, like everything. Like it's the only thing that props up the economy. They change the conversion rate of like the currency to the euro, like in specific summer months, to just get more money out of like German, Austrian, Italian tourists. It's a very cursed economy.
I think therefore long term, probably when this tourist season ends up not being the tourist season they're expecting, which is going to happen after this election has now taken place, as opposed to if the election had happened when it was originally planned.
Like, yeah, it's happening now, but they're not going to get the results until probably September, October.
Yeah, because
this season was shit.
Yeah, there'd be still hope in a lot of places that, you know, August might be good, and we might get some like knock on in September. It might be fine, and that might be true, but this is kind of unfortunate, where if you have specific criticisms of the way the HZ are handling the economy in terms of like not actually putting a push into diversifying it at all, at least from your perspective, and then a pandemic happens that causes the precariousness of the economy to really, really come to fruition, and then you have an election just before it, so the HZ can take credit for not massively fucking up the pandemic, because Croatia's cases and death rate has been kind of typical for a European country that didn't like ignore that there was a pandemic happening.
Yeah, I think they've done quite well. I think Croatia, like a lot of other countries actually, but like Ireland is probably a good example of what you can compare it to. Views how it's handling coronavirus through the lens of like how other kind of regional rivals are handling coronavirus. Like Ireland didn't handle coronavirus particularly well. I think we had like the 8th highest death rate in the world. But because we did better than the UK, no one in Ireland seemed to care. Croatia has a similar thing. Like in the region, while people died and those numbers like coming from a country like Germany, the UK or Ireland doesn't look really bad at all. There are definitely countries in the region that did better. I think Slovenia did better. But like they did better than Serbia. So they're happy with that. There's kind of a general happiness with it. But that being said, there was also kind of like a general rejection, like in Zagreb, the capital, there was a general rejection of both like the two major parties to a certain extent over the handling of this, namely of HDZ within the capital. There was a rejection of them. And one of Zagreb's like districts went to the SDP or the Restart Coalition, I think more accurately.
Yeah.
But a lot of like one of the seats in Zagreb, central Zagreb, like was one of the only places in Croatia to not vote for either of those two like major parties. By a plurality. They voted for the SSIP, which is what's the SSIP? God damn it. This is the thing when like because most of these parties that I listed earlier are like coalitions of several other smaller parties. there was a kind of like a rejection namely in cities of like the two major parties. The new like Green Left coalition did well in Zagreb and Dalmatia, but like Dalmatia is a district, while quite large and has a lot of rural areas, is also where like most of the other cities in Croatia are. Like they did well in Split, which is Croatia's second largest city.
I think it's not that the Restart Coalition could have massively capitalized necessarily on an inevitable now economic downturn, but I guess it was like to some extent like a pragmatic, we need to have an election at some point, we don't want to put off the election completely, and this seems like the most sensible time to have it. But it has created this kind of in where I think people are noting that, I guess we can talk about opinion polls now, that this was a surprise result. It was expected that Restart might win this, or HDZ would win by a much like a slim margin. But that is, as you've said, the results is not the case. Restart ended up losing seats even as they were gaining in polls. But that probably wouldn't have happened if you'd had the election in, say, 2 months. And to a certain extent, it's because they were able to capitalize on, we haven't massively screwed everything, and we can make promises now onto like recovery plans, etc. It's the time for kind of continuity, etc. But I think people will feel differently when that wears off. And I mean, along with that, it's probably you know other small parties such as like the Green Left parties could have seen even larger gains if, again, the things that they were saying on the economy were borne out, not just to be like partly true, but to be very true and increasingly true as people really really come to terms with things like there not really being a tourist season to any extent that they were expecting.
I think it's So I just want to mention one thing about like STP's results, or the Restart Coalition's results, yeah. Which is there was kind of like a tactical move, like STP, while being like the major party, the second major party in Croatian politics, and they basically carry the pre-made coalitions that they're a part of. The pre-made coalitions kind of like have changed names several times. In the last election, they were called the People's Coalition. Mm. But like, for example, in this election, they brought back into the coalition the Istrian Assembly Party. Mm. Istria is the most westerly region of Croatia. It's basically Italy. Yeah. And for a lot of its history, it was Italy. But like, it's where the Italian minority is. It's where like the kind of merging of Croatian and Italian cuisine happens. It's beautiful. Anyway, it's I think by bringing in that party into the coalition, regardless of how unpopular they were, the regionalist like Istrian party kind of like helped them keep that region, because that is where most of their votes seem to have come from. Mm. On like a regional level. Because they lost Zagreb, they lost the like region just south of Maghreb. I'm not entirely sure of the name of it. It's region 7, because they number the regions for electoral purposes. But it's like, that's a huge commuter region for Zagreb. Mm-hmm. And as such, it's usually considered more like quote unquote liberal. The whole thing was kind of a mess for them, in particular. But yeah, going back to the polling, sorry, because I'm a bit all over the place. Mm. The one of the big aspects of the polling, if you look at the last couple of years in terms of polling, was the like unknown or like undecideds made up a huge, grotesquely large portion of the vote. Yeah. For example, for like most of 2019. The undecideds were between like 47% and 40% of people polled.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like that's more than let's like substantially. That's like, oh geez, like 15% more on average than like the next like any party, which would have been the HDZ polling at around like 25%. So there's like, and that doesn't really go down even like 1 month before the election happens. Undecideds are just shy of 20%. There was like a huge gamble by going ahead with this election for like most people, like most parties.
Yeah. Yeah, I think if you look at the kind of the seat projections that go along with those polls, you effectively have estimates for either Restart Coalition coming a few seats ahead of HGZ, or in some cases like quite a few seats ahead of. There's one that has them more than 10 seats ahead back in like late June, which would be quite close.
There's
to
two.
Yeah.
There's early June and late June, yeah.
Yeah. And but if you consider in those polls, you have undecided still near 20% even at that stage. You're kind of like, well, if you look at how the seat projections ended up breaking down, you can see where those went. They largely went to the HDZ, and then actually the Green Left gained seats versus their polling like by quite reasonable amount. They're like averagely they were polling around 4 seats and they ended up with 7, but obviously the HDZ were the actual gainers. They went from their last poll was 52 and they went up to 66 which is like it's a huge bump, and they ended up very far ahead of the Restart Coalition. I think like a lot of that does come from kind of semi-satisfaction with the handling of the coronavirus, that and like voter turnout was very bad. That like need to put that like
very bad
in very very clear terms as well.
46.9%.
Yeah, which is like, this is the thing, you were like, oh, it's easy to look at these results and kind of go, oh, the country's united around HGZ. They're actually much closer to a majority than they have been for a long time. But in practice, you've almost nearly two thirds of the country not coming to vote. It's not really a ringing endorsement. It's more of a either acknowledgement this might not matter or kind of dissatisfaction with the options being given, which I think is probably more the latter. Because, yeah, the turnout hasn't been good either way. Even the turnout of the previous election isn't good. And this is what you kind of see with on top of that, depression from, like, from coronavirus, which is not great for elections generally and places that kind of had to hold elections. I think it would have been much worse, obviously, if they just postponed the election indefinitely. That would be the worst possible version of this, but this doesn't seem like a good alternative to me.
No, it's not really. I think we talked about this quite a bit this year, about like the general boon towards sitting parties, like everywhere, like Fine Gael in Ireland, even having a like completely disastrous election result earlier in the year in Ireland, they're now like back on top because they supposedly handled the coronavirus crisis quite well. Maybe not back on top, but like certainly better than they did in the actual election. And this has kind of happened everywhere. Like CDU is climbing in Germany again. So this is something that we've seen the polling across the continent, but we just haven't seen many elections to see if any of this will bear out. I guess this is possibly an election that has shown that this is kind of like borne out, that those polling will actually result in results, like actual results, if you hold the election, which for many countries is a disastrously irresponsible thing to do.
I think also as well, like in the absence of the coronavirus, I could imagine like Scurra's party doing a lot better if the focus wasn't on there's a massive pandemic, no one can move anywhere anyway, versus what the conversation was going back to before the pandemic, which is, oh, there's like more immigration from Turkey again with refugees, and that's the kind of thing that, you know, that entire homeland movement, quote unquote, was about. Like obviously they still did well, and that was kind of what they were polling around, but this is what you've seen in a lot of other countries, where kind of these kind of parties start up and then they suddenly like take off, due to being able to attach themselves to something that's kind of in vogue and being actually talked about, whereas hasn't really taken hold here. But I guess now they have seats in the parliament, and they're kind of going to be an institution for the length of this parliament, which is
they're the third largest party in this parliament, which again, because Croatia is like a 2.5 party system, that doesn't really like, that doesn't mean they have like a huge amount of seats, but they have enough, and they sit in position to be a kingmaker. Like if the HDZ ever gets put into a position where they're really like, this could be next election, it could be after like the quote-unquote crisis is over within Croatia and there's like maybe a government reshuffle, but like Domovinski Pokret, Škoro's party, could like actually very much like they'd work with HDZ well before they work for the SDP or SDP. So like, yeah, that's going to happen at some point, presumably, because it looks like they're only going to gain from this, namely because they have, reading their platform now, and also reading it in, I'm reading it in Croatian to get like the real shit translated. Of course, I don't actually speak Croatian, but unlike a lot of other of these kind of like far right parties that I think started well and truly before the coronavirus thing hit, Škoro's movement started before coronavirus hit, but the actual party was founded in late February, so it's not necessarily like, I think in late February we kind of knew that Italy was being a bit, I don't know, when did that actually start? We went into lockdown in March, so I think everyone kind of...
Yeah, it was bad in Italy in February. Like,
it was, yeah, yeah. So they found at this party with a like pretty aware. Like, Italy is their largest neighbor. Like,
yeah,
they're
right, yeah.
Yeah. So it's like a 20-minute like ferry ride, or yeah. So like. Yeah, I, looking at the core values and the positions they've taken, they do seem to, unlike other like right wing parties across Europe, they do seem to have like answers to this. They do a lot of like there's a kind of like a typical Eastern Europe far right party thing of just like a little bit of cash in hand like handouts to like families. So they're big proponents of, you know, programs being put in place to carry people through the crisis, which will get you a lot of votes because it's the right thing to do. But also, like, and that was also one of the criticisms, because the parliament in Croatia was shut down out of fear of spreading the coronavirus amongst the like MPs and whatnot. But the critiques, particularly from like the people of Zagreb, was by shutting down the parliament, you don't really have the opportunity to pass any of the laws needed to help people through this. Like, as far as I know, Croatia hasn't gotten any kind of like mortgage moratorium, rent relief, any of the kind of like smattering of small plans that like other countries have, small business bailouts, things like that. Whereas like the homeland movement of Škoro was in favor of that, as well as, this is an interesting one that has been, this is an interesting core value. Encouraging creativity and respect for the rights of scientists to free research freely without political imposition, which is a super interesting point that I'm sure will appeal to a lot of people in terms of coronavirus, as well as probably getting on your like anti-vaxxer cranks and things like that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this is, yeah, I think this party is probably positioned to do reasonably well in the future, and is not one of these parties that have been caught with their pants down their around their ankles in regards to like coronavirus.
Well, that sucks. That's basically my my opinion of the Croatian election results. Something that's kind of like an aside to this that I'd like to discuss that is. It's on topic, but the actual point of it is off topic. There was like there was a minor like Brussels bubble hubbub because the HTZ and the days coming up to the election had a campaign video where all of their EPP colleagues, who are like heads of parties and stuff around the continent, who might be like recognizable public figures. They had a supercut of them all saying the HDZ's campaign slogan, which it was I think it translated to like "Secure Croatia" or something. It was kind of a generic conservative party tagline, but basically it was to show that like, oh, the HDZ has clout in Europe is kind of the selling point of it. Or like voting a vote for us is a vote for like all these heads of state you might recognize. So like, Ireland's head of Ireland, or not head of state, like kind of prime ministers, etc. So like Ireland's Taoiseach, the Radcar at the time, was in it. Who else was in it? Everybody was in it. There's a lot of people. But notably, the Ursula von der Leyen was in it, and she was first actually, because she would be very recognizable. I think it's kind of the, obviously people would recognize like Angela Merkel and stuff, but she's, von der Leyen is probably now the kind of person who would otherwise be in a photo of a news story about the EU more generally, would be like you'd probably recognize her if you followed the news. So having her at the front of it, that might seem like relatively normal, but I think there's an interesting conceptual case around the logic of the like mega coalition that runs all the EU institutions now, which is the center right, the center left, and the liberals all run everything as a giant coalition where they've split up the top jobs. And the argument at the time effectively was von der Leyen is very qualified for this position, and no one could agree on any of the on letting the job go to any of the people who were kind of like running for the job publicly as part of the election, so the Spitzenkandidat thing. And a large part of the argument did rest on, well, the commission is supposed to be this technocratic, like, law writing and enforcing body. It's not supposed to be like a directly elected political office. It's very difficult to couch that, like, at the same time with, but we're also going to use to our advantage that we happen to have the head of it, even though in the, like, in the coalition negotiations, we split up the top jobs in a way that was supposed to be kind of semi-neutral. So having von der Leyen go around as, with, like, head of the EU Commission under her name, doing campaign, like, a campaign thing for one of the member parties at EPP is, like, a political advantage of that position that doesn't really come with head of the parliament, for instance. Like, nobody knows who David Sassoli is. He's kind of, just a blank face. And there's, like, an interesting article I like, agreed to kind of the core, like, the core argument of by, one of the Renew Europe Dutch MEPs, who I imagine I don't agree with on a lot of stuff, but kind of her point was, like, obviously this is kind of inside baseball to a certain extent, and no one's really realistically arguing that, like, Ursula von der Leyen saying the campaign slogan of the HDZ changed lots of people's minds, but it is acknowledging that, like, if Ursula von der Leyen is going to do, like, do politics, they need to start doing the things, the other things they kind of implied that they were going to do, which was increase democratic representation in the EU, namely via making the parliament more powerful and taking their input more seriously, and or formalizing it in some way and having a proposal for formalizing it. So basically, if you're going to do the politics bit of your supposedly non-political appointed position, you also have to do the making things more democratic to make that more, like, allowed at the same time, which in practice they're not doing, and it's, you know, an opportunity for them to do it, but it's on the face of it, I think it's a signal that the EPP are shit and are happy to be shit. It also is, like, an incredibly minor, really, in the grand scheme of things thing, and, like, they kind of apology non-apology about it, where they were like, oh, we admit that wasn't, like, a good look, but, like, no one's at fault, basically.
We admit that it was bad vibes. That's what we're doing here. Oh god, yeah, I love this Brussels bubble stuff, because it's very petty and stupid. But I also do love just, like, the maddening feeling of, like, encountering Brussels bubble stuff and being like, is this a thing? Does anyone actually care about this, or is this just the weird chemicals they put into the water in Brussels that make you, like, care about, like, weird trade deals?
Yeah, I think it is to a certain extent that if they're able to. I think you could make the, you know, taking to an extreme argument where if one person is kind of, like, more sold to the HDZ because they're like, oh, they have, like, political power in Europe, and I can see this because they've managed to convince, like, the most theoretically most powerful woman in the EU to take 2 seconds out of her day to say two words on camera, and you're like, that, like, I mean, that doesn't have zero value, for sure. And if it did actually have zero value, which is what they're trying to kind of say, then they wouldn't have bothered doing it.
This got it.
Required someone's time, you know?
It required money. Like, it's more just the... never mind Ursula von der Leyen taking time out of her day to say this stuff. It's more just, like, paying the camera crew that was sent to her office or wherever the hell to, like... yeah, film her saying this. That's more the, you spent money on this.
Yeah, I think it's a very good core argument for, like, either having the commission president be elected in some form, or just making the parliament a lot more powerful. Because if you're going to, like, play politics with the head commission jobs, then that's fine. But it is kind of like a, not like an unfair and politics is a sport aspect of it. It's more of a cool, so we're all acknowledging the thing that we would all like make sense. you're allowed to do this, but only if you make it, like, more democratic in some way, because you're kind of pretending that the EPP control the commission, which they don't really in practice.
Or they're not meant to anyway. If we're saying that they do, that we really shouldn't, because they're not meant to.
Yes, there's a one of many arguments you've been making about that.
Yeah, right. It is interesting, but I also have a very hard time. Like, I'm sure everyone in the Brussels Twitter bubble or whatever, like, got really excited about this, or like, oh, this is a bit of a scandal or whatever. Mm. But it's very hard to believe that, like, oh God, that, like, someone in fucking, like, shit is poor, like, Slavonia was, like, swayed by this. Because, like... Is it Slavonia? I actually just wanted to kind of flex on my, like, weird Croatian geography knowledge. But, like, the part of Croatia that isn't on the coast, the one that's, like, underneath Hungary, which is just, like, a bunch of farmers, that I don't really think they care about that ad. But you're right, there is something to be said that, like, it does kind of project this image of, like, oh, we're the adults in the room. Look, we get on with all the other adults. Yeah.
Europe trust us to run the country, and if you want help from Europe and access to Europe, maybe we're the ones you should like. And you're like, well,
yeah,
it's, you can pretend that as much as you want, but it's
yeah. There's like a subconscious tourism message on that as well, isn't there? Mm. Like, of
yeah,
because Croatian tourists mostly come from Europe, elsewhere in Europe. Yeah. So that was the election. Anything else to add to the Croatian parliamentary election of 2020, Hugh?
No.
Okay, then. Well,
I think they should maybe should have sort of postponed it, to be completely honest.
Yeah, right. Oh, jeez. Well, with that being said, Previously in Europe is recorded and produced by Hugh O'Brien and Kieran Dold. If you like the show, make sure to give us a shout out. Talk to your friends, and if you know anyone who might like the podcast, tell them about it. Word of mouth is, like, really important. You can share us on social media. We have most of the social media accounts. There's a Facebook page that you can join, just called Previously in Europe. If you don't look like a bot or you're trying to sell Bitcoin, we'll let you in. We have a Twitter at Prev in Europe, P-R-E-V in Europe. There's a Discord and stuff and all that, and a subreddit, and you can find all that on the website previouslyineurope.eu. If you really like the show, though, there's two other ways you can support us. First is you can leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, a 4 or 5 star review, especially with some text accompanying it saying, like, what you like about the show. Helps the podcast algorithm gods, and then more people find out about the podcast, and that's also good. And lastly, the most material way that you can support us is our Patreon, patreon.com/previouslyineurope. There you can donate a amount of money to help keep the podcasting lights on, and you get your name shouted out if you donate more than $3 per month, like these cool cats. Smero, Echo2100, Svenvest, Petra V, Patrick Seba, Newt Alexander, Michael Hall, Drew Zarian, Niall McLaughlin, Subliminal Kid, Dermot Burke, and Justin Paul Sammons. So, if you want to be like those cool people, donate some money and we'll shout out your name. And until next week, pay attention to the skies. And by skies, I mean Serbia. It's mostly Serbia. Pay attention to Serbia. Thanks for listening.